Welcome, everybody, to another episode of the Glorious Rugby Podcast. I'm your co-host, John Fitzpatrick, and joining me is my fellow co-host, Alistair Kirschpoole, AKP. We're both back on the mics this week. How you doing, and how was your weekend?
Weekend was pretty good. For once, did not go to the game. It's the first time I've missed an Old Glory home game. But, you know, things happen every now and then.
And of course, first, thank you, Rolly, for jumping on and filling in my shoes, and more than admirably filling in my shoes. We'll have to have him back on the show. And of course, the one game that AKP is not there is the game that I decide to show up, and I rolled up with the family and one of my son's friends. We had a good time despite the outcome, but it was a beautiful day. The venue was looking good. The grass was fantastic. It was a busy rugby day, actually, for me, AKP. Earlier in the day, I played a game of tackle 15s for the first time in about 6 or 7 years, and I am still feeling it today. It was American University, where I went to college, the alumni game, first game in about 6 or 7 years, COVID and other things. Ton of alumni showed up, which was more than okay, because I wanted like 10 or 15 minutes, not to get hurt, just go out there and have a little fun. Had some fun, maybe got hurt a little bit, but it was fun to go out there and just kind of run around, and the old boys, we put up a good show, beat the current squad, but the current squad is looking good and proud of their effort and a great group there. But yeah, that was the beginning of my rugby Saturday, and then closed it out with that Old Glory DC match. So AKP, we got to talk about this Houston match, so we'll break that down and then look ahead to a very pivotal Week 9 matchup on the road against the Utah Warriors, who, man, they surprised, I think, a lot of people by beating San Diego at Snapdragon Stadium. We'll get to all of that in just a bit. But AKP, if you had to summarize in a word or two your thoughts after that Houston match, please tell me.
Fairly upset. I was intoxicated at the time, so that probably didn't help things. But yeah, no, that was a bad game. Old Glory played badly in that game. There's a lot of times where you can lose a game and it's not necessarily the end of the world. I didn't think, you know, like, we lost by quite a bit to San Diego, but at the end of the day there were some weird things around, you know, the wind and the tactics with kicking there, and you know, it felt like, okay, we did a couple of things badly and that really sunk the whole ship. But this time it was just bad. It was a bad game,
which I don't understand. Dan, and we'll break this down in a little bit, because Old Glory had to be prepared, right? They knew they were facing one of the top teams in the Western Conference at home, where, yes, Old Glory, I mean, is it fair to say they've struggled at home, right? No wins at home yet in the new venue. We're 2-3-2 on the season. All the wins have come on the road here. AKP, I mean, it was setting up to be a game where, and we talk about it every single week, where at a minimum, a table point or two, right? Four tries, and if you're not going to come up on the winner's side of the column, at least lose by less than 7 points, right? So at least get 2 table points. Failed to get any table points, particularly on a weekend where we saw Chicago all of a sudden drop 50 points for the second straight week, and we saw a team, New England. They lost at home, so an opportunity to gain ground. And then NOLA Gold, they lost to Miami Sharks, and oh shoot, the Sharks are nipping at our heels. What is going on in the Eastern Conference? Anyway, the point is, there was so much at stake in this round, and it just seems like another missed opportunity. And I feel like we're starting to get to the point, AKP, where, we'll get to this in a second, maybe this Houston game, is it too early to call it a must-win game?
I mean, at this point, it's one of those things that, like, talking to Rolly, it was, we took a look at the season coming up, and we had a conversation about games we were expecting would go well for us and go badly for us. And this Houston game was always expected to potentially be a bit of a rough one for us. But then, you know, we were looking at Utah coming up and Miami coming up, Utah going through a rough patch, Miami going through a rough patch. And suddenly they're great. Suddenly those teams are, you know, going around upsetting higher ranked opponents, and those are no longer easy gimme games. And I think that's partly just a matter of the season the way the season has gone overall, like there are no invincible teams this year. There's no one who's very far ahead of the pack, and there's no one who's very far behind the pack. And, you know, all it takes is, you know, figuring out the formula and sort of clicking into another gear, and suddenly anyone can be anyone. And that's why it's important for us to win, you know, because 4 out of the 6 teams in each conference are going to the playoffs. So it's not that hard to make playoffs this year. We don't need to be, you know, in the top 2 or the top 3 or anything crazy like that. But we do still need to finish ahead of one of New England, NOLA, Chicago, or Miami. And for a while, Miami looked like the, you know, far and away the easiest one to finish ahead of, because they're really, you know, brand new team. They really hadn't figured things out. And we still have a lead on them. But if they have figured out things, if this defeat of NOLA was not a fluke and it represents real progress for that team, then, you know, at this point, are we going to make the playoffs? It's a genuine question. And that's that makes these games incredibly important, because, yeah, there's not a lot of, we're like halfway through the season. You know, if we lose things now, if we get behind the ball now, there's not a ton of time to make it up. And you don't want to have to, you want to be going in ahead, and you don't want to have to be chasing a playoff spot late into the season.
You know, AKP, if there's anything encouraging about Old Glory in the position that they're in right now, is that I think it's fair to say this has not been the best rugby that they've played, right? So they're 2-3-2, right? We can see the standings right now. They're in fourth place. They've got 14 table points. They've got 2 points ahead of Miami. They're trailing NOLA in third by 2 points. And then there is a little bit of separation of the pack in New England at 24 points and Chicago at 23 points, right? But again, this is not Old Glory's best rugby. And if Old Glory's best rugby is ahead of them, then I'm encouraged by that. And I think a lot of that may stem from the fact that, you know, the absence of Jama has really played a factor into all of this. So when he comes back in week 10, I think we'll see some improved play. But there's a time to turn things around. It is now, right? And to your point, like, there's some interesting things happening in the Eastern Conference, right? We're seeing now Chicago starting to really put it together. Again, 52 straight weeks of 50-plus points, right? New England, they lost at home, right? And I think people were surprised by that, but maybe they shouldn't be, because Seattle's a tough squad. They're going to be challenging in the Western Conference. I'm hearing some rumors in New England that potentially one of their best players may be out for the rest of this season. And that's unfortunate news, and it's sad news, but, you know, injuries happen, suspensions happen, teams have to deal with it. Now we've got Miami emerging here. Things are going to be heating up quickly. And to your point, yes, with these next couple of weeks ahead of us, now's the time to start clicking. And real soon, otherwise, can you imagine that, AKP, with 4 teams in both conferences making the playoffs, Old Glory to miss it? Like, that's absurd to think about, considering the optimism we had at the beginning of the season, which, again, makes me encouraged. Again, as poorly as Old Glory is playing right now, they're still, obviously, in the playoff chase. I think their best rugby is ahead of them. But we need to figure this out now. So AKP, we're jumping around on this episode a little bit, but what do they need to figure out and change, like, now? We'll get back to the Houston recap in just a second, but, like, let's talk about this now. Like, what do they need to do between now and Friday night when they go to Utah and take on the Warriors?
Well, actually, I'm just going to take it right back to the Houston game, because I think there were some things that were instructive there that really do highlight. So one of the things to keep in mind with the Houston game, the first half was bad, but the second half was much improved. And I think, you know, like, if you look at, I think we were tied as far as the amount of points scored in the second half with Houston. It was just that we dug ourselves into a big hole in the first half. And some of that, I think, is coming off the bye week. I think bye weeks are often disruptive, and, you know, especially when you've got things clicking in a certain way, it can really throw you off having just a week where you're not actually playing rugby. But there were also some lineup decisions that were odd in the first half. I mean, Iscaro didn't start it on the bench, our best scrummager. I mean, the scrums were bad in the first half, but as soon as Iscaro came back on, like, it really sorted itself out. So that was just a, but you know, Facundo Gattis getting his first start. We had Tavita Nangali, who, you know, had a great game, but came on, but started for the first time this year. Mike Tabulis starting at fullback, and Damian Hoyland moving into the centers, which we haven't seen yet this season. So there were quite a lot of changes to what has become a fairly stable lineup recently. And so something that does give me hope is that, you know, this team could figure it out. They did, and they did towards like halfway through the game. I think, though, the interesting thing that happened in that second half, and they mentioned it on the broadcast a bit, that the coaches wanted to play a bit more ball in hand and not just kick it away all the time. And we did see Old Glory be, you know, gain quite a lot of ground in the second half, you know, just keeping it ball in hand. I mean, in fact, looking at the stats in terms of meters gained, Old Glory was the top 5 meters gained by players in that match, all of them Old Glory players. You know, Tavita Nangali, over 100 meters on the ground. Tommaso Boni, once again, over 100 meters. You know, you've got the keys of a very good functional attack there, but there's no breakaway threat. There's no moment where you think, oh, this is dangerous. They might manage to make it through here. They might, you know, someone might cut. You know, it's just somehow there's, the attack just seems incredibly predictable, and we don't have the...
Is some of that a credit to Houston's defense? Just pausing there, a credit to them, right? Like, I think defensively they're good. Like, when I was watching the game, and I was watching it from up on the hill, Houston, in their scramble defense, they recover quickly, and they get in position, and it seemed like they were able to really shut things down, where Old Glory was trying to form something, or trying to counter, or trying to get, you know, extra man in space, trying to free Moeller. It just... I don't know if it was a credit to Houston and their ability to just play really good scramble defense, or Old Glory just, they've got the pieces, they just couldn't put it all together. Were they stymied by Houston, or was it more systematic of what the attack is for Old Glory?
I think it is. I mean, Houston does have a good defense, but they don't have an exceptional defense. It's not a defense that, you know, I don't look at their defense versus, say, San Diego's or Seattle's or New England's or NOLA's and say, oh, that's Sabercats, way better than those teams. They're good. But, you know, Old Glory should be able to, we have, you know, Tommaso Boni is doing so much work in the midfield. How is it not opening up any space outside of him? You know, we've got freaking stars on the wings. I mean, you know, Axel Muller has been tearing it up on the sevens pitch. He's been, you know, he's come straight out of the top 14 in France, and yet, you know, he's gaining a paltry number of meters every game and having to work hard for them. And it's like, there's something, I would say it's a tactics thing. There's some tactics problem there where they just don't know how to, there's just not enough deception or creativity in there to actually open up and get people in space. And we saw that 2 intercepts, almost identical in that game, you know, that it's just like, okay, so it's so obvious that the other team knows exactly where to be. And it wasn't, you know, sometimes you get intercepts in broken play and moments where it's like, okay, the guy just happened to be in the right place at the right time. But no, these were just reads.
Yeah.
In,
we're becoming too, you know, predictable.
Normal phase play. Yeah, yeah. As we just, you know, the players know where they're going to be, and we don't really manage to get defenders into a place where they have to make a tough decision between tackle this guy or tackle that guy.
Yeah.
And it just, it means that we can go through the phases, but we're not really making much ground. And then there's the fact that, you know, we're just not making much territory. Houston sort of effortlessly dominated the territory game because, you know, wait for a penalty, get Alatimu to kick it 50 meters down the pitch, and you're good to go. And we weren't able to accomplish anything like that. it just, I don't know. It feels like we need, there needs to be a spark. We need a flame.
Well,
something to catch fire.
Yeah, well, I think a couple of things. I think that the strength, the early part of the season for Old Glory has been in the pack, and this is something that we've talked about. And certainly there were some changes here. You know, Jack coming off the bench, that's not going to happen too often. Martin Vaca is probably going to be, you know, primarily the starting hooker. Great to see Nangali in there, and I think we get him into the game more and more. I mean, he's a big presence. Sounds like Old Glory DC. Not sounds like it. They are getting reinforcements, right? And I think we do need a little bit more help in the front row. I guess who's coming back to the Old Glory squad? It'd be interesting to see if he's going to play any minutes on Friday. I'm willing to bet that he will. But former prop from Old Glory DC from a few seasons ago, Stephen Longwell, coming back to Old Glory DC.
This is news to me.
Oh, I'm surprised you hadn't. Seriously, I'm surprised you hadn't seen that yet. Yeah,
it's been like half a week since I checked Twitter last. Good. I've been totally out of it this week.
Well, hey,
watched the game. That was
breaking it. News. Stephen Longwell's coming back, buddy. How do you feel about that?
Now that's huge news. Oh yeah, because that just where we've had weakness. It's always been on that tight head side of the. You know, Tyler Roland does a pretty decent job, but if we could have Stephen Longwell starting and Roland coming off the bench. That makes that side of the pitch just like, or that side of the scrum just excellent, and that could turn the scrum into a real weapon for us.
I agree 100%. I think getting back to, you know, adding on to the strength, that's going to help a ton. It'll be interesting to see how that works for the international, you know, the game day decisions there, but. Adding Stephen Longwell back to the pack is massive. I mean, you saw the game, the lineouts, and the set pieces. Just let's tackle this for a little bit or try to. What is going on there, man? Was it today just that weekend just sloppy or uncharacteristic, or what are we seeing? Or what are you seeing?
We haven't had that much of a problem in the lineouts this year. Like our lineouts have been a strength, but also, you know, this is one of the first games where we haven't played Ignacio Dotti, who's been absolutely key to our lineout success so far, and also starting Facundo Gaddis. And, you know, maybe the combination there were a lot of changes up front, and, you know, in the sort of people who are key to making that lineout work. And so it could just be that the bench player is not quite as polished in that sense, but I feel like that's the lineout has usually been consistent enough that I don't feel too scared of that being a problem going forward.
Yeah, and I will say, and we've brought this up before, it was windy again there at the Maryland Soccerplex again. It's a beautiful venue. The grass looks fantastic. It's a great environment. I forgot just how many fields are at this complex. There were so many other people there for soccer games and for basketball at the field house. There were baseball games going on. Really, really cool to see. But it was a little windy there again, and I think that may have played into a little bit. But, I mean, it's home field advantage, right? Or it should be. You know, we should know there a little bit. But enough about Mother Nature and the weather and all that good stuff. AKP, anything else you want to cover real quickly about Houston, or should we move towards Utah?
Yeah, let's move towards Utah.
Okay, I'm going to ask you quite bluntly, AKP, is this a must-win game for Old Glory?
I think this is close. This is certainly closer than we've been getting. I mean, the thing is, it's like, it's not unrecoverable if we lose this, but... You know, we really, really, really need to start winning some games, you know, lickety split. And if we're not going to win this, anything less than a two bonus point loss is just unacceptable and like a huge problem. Because the thing is, two bonus point loss, that's equal to the draws that we got. Like that's a little boost in the standings. So, I mean, the attack is going to have to be operating. We're going to have to get at least four tries. If we lose, you know, because things can happen every now and then. You know, sometimes you just get unlucky and you know, what would have been a win, last minute penalty goal or, you know, last minute intercept try or something happens and you lose. But we should not be losing by more than 7 points, especially to a Utah team that has struggled. They had a good game against San Diego, but that's not going to happen. Like, that's the first good performance of the year, really. Like, we can't be losing to this Utah team.
Hey, KP, I'm gonna go and say this is a must-win game for a variety of reasons. One, I think Utah is feeling themselves, right? They just knocked off San Diego at home. San Diego's first loss there in a couple of seasons. Like, a team that I feel like maybe has quietly gone 5-2, and you know, they're in third place in the Western Conference with eyes on getting back to, you know, the MLR final again. That I think Utah felt good about that win. Mockany is back now. Michael Manson's running all over people. There are some pieces there on Utah's team where they can score. And defensively, I think they've played pretty well. And look, they're right back in the chase now in the Western Conference. They're sitting in fifth place, but they're a point back of Dallas. Dallas is definitely an improved squad, right? So, like, Utah understands that. They're now playing at home. They've got a little momentum going. They're going to want to go out and play really well in front of a partisan crowd here. So this is a must-win game for Old Glory DC, simply because, I mean, at certain point in the season, we need to start piling up some W's here. I mean, I'm tired of these, you know, draws and these close losses here, right? This, I think on paper, Old Glory is too good of a team to be performing under the expectations they are right now. I think they're underperforming right now, and I think they'll tell you that, right? And I think Simon Cross will probably be like, yeah, this is not how we should be performing. And if you look at the rest of Week 9, I want to break this down real quick, right? So everyone's going to be watching what Old Glory's doing, because that's the Friday night game. It's the first game of Week 9. If we look at the rest of Week 9, Nola Gold is playing Anthem. I'm sorry, this is a bonus point win for Nola Gold. It should be. They should go out there Absolutely. And be anticipating a bonus point win, okay? Miami has Dallas. That's going to be an interesting matchup, right? Dallas, you know, they're coming off of a bye. Miami just had a nice win over Nola. That'll be an interesting thing to watch. Skip on down. We're going to skip over Houston, San Diego real quick. That'll be a fun one to watch. LA is hosting the New England Free Jacks. I'm sure New England's going to want to turn around and get a win against LA. LA's at the bottom of the Western Conference. They're 1-5-1. They're going to put up a fight. But New England's going in this one thinking, hey, we need to get a win here. And now we've got Chicago on bye, right? So a team that we're chasing in the standings. So a loss in Week 9, yeah, it's not going to derail the season. But we got to start getting some momentum. We got to start stacking up some W's here, particularly as we look ahead to Week 10, and we welcome back Jamma, and we welcome the Miami Sharks into town, and then Week 11, we got Chicago before Week 12 bye. I want us to start stacking up some W's before that Week 12 bye, and we start firing on cylinders. We got Stephen Longwell coming in. In my mind, long-winded rant, this is a must-win game for Old Glory DC, and I know that sounds crazy in Week 9, but this is where we are based on how they're playing right now.
Yeah, yeah, and certainly, you know, it's one of those where the Old Glory is definitely underperforming right now. They're definitely not reaching the level that they have the players and potential for. I mean, you know, Damian Hoyland has been, you know, absolutely fantastic, beating tons of players, gaining tons of meters. You know, he runs, you know, you get him with one man to beat, he's probably going to beat him and make it. You know, Tommaso Boni has been, you know, just gaining meters the hard way, and it's just a hard guy to bring down. And you've got all these, you know, Jason Robertson coming back, and you know, he's looked really good at fly half, and yet somehow none of this adds up to a team that can win games. And I do think missing Jamma makes a difference, but it's also, you know, one player can't make or break your team in that way. There's a number of other players that are quality players, but somehow the team overall just isn't where it needs to be. And I think there's a certain amount of the players themselves need to take responsibility for this and to take ownership over the team and to decide that they can do better than this and find a new level from themselves, because they've got the quality. They just can't put it together yet. And this would be a fantastic time to turn it around.
Let me ask you one more question, AKP, because I thought this was interesting. There was no Danny Tusitala at all against Houston. Wasn't on the match day 23 at all. He was at the game, and I did see him walking around chatting with fans. You know, we know that it's been an interesting start of the season for Danny here. But, you know, I'm starting to have some question marks just about what the scrum half play will be for Old Glory through the rest of the season. You know, was it a strategic decision just to sit Danny here? He seems like he's pretty well rested. Is there something else going on? Am I digging under a rock that I shouldn't be digging under? Like, fill me in here. Like, what do you think's happening?
I don't know. I think it's partly just that, you know, McVee has played very well. He's had a great start to the season. It's sort of a surprise. I mean, I remember when I had him as the third string scrum half on this team, but he's really taken the position and made it his own. And, you know, I think we all have such good memories of Danny Tusitala in those first couple of seasons and really looking impressive. But I don't know. I guess the coaches have just decided that McVee is better. Now, I'm not sure that Buckley has had a bit of a hard time coming off the bench recently. I feel like he was great when he started. I had no problems there. And then coming off the bench, he's kind of struggled to make a real impact. So I'd love to see Danny coming off the bench more. But also, like you mentioned, if we're starting to play more, if we're bringing in Stephen Longwell and we start having to actually watch those, and Tavita Nungali's back and we have to start actually watching those foreign player slots, then is that something where there stops being space for Danny in the roster?
Mm-hmm. Another question for you. Grady. We haven't, you know, like, I feel like he's kind of odd man out in some of these match day 23 decisions, and he just had a haircut. I think he shaved his head. He donated his locks to a charity he's grown out for 2.5-3 years. Kudos, Grady, for doing that. It's just different seeing him with short hair. But you know, just thinking back at last season when you know he was you know mixing it up with Tito, you know Diaz Bonilla at the 10 and 15 spot. But I don't know. I just feel like he there's a weapon there that could add a little bit more punch. And I don't know if we're just there's just not a spot for him, but would love to see him get in the mix a bit more. And maybe we will. Maybe the Houston game was just strategically won. Western Conference, maybe, you know, we'll save him for later. But what are your thoughts there on trying to get Grady on the field more?
Yeah, I think he's the best open field kicker we have, too. I've been very impressed with his ability to control things off the boot. I think that's been something we've been missing. I don't know if it's just an ambition thing, like a tactical, we just keep it safe with the kicks, but we don't seem to get any distance on any of our clearance kicks anymore. It's like, we're lucky if it gets up to the, you know, we're lucky if we get even 10 meters from the halfway point when we're trying to clear our own side, and it's really hurt the territory game. I would love to see, I think my ideal starting back line would be, you know, Jason Robertson, then your centers of Boney and Talataina, and then I would personally put, you know, either Perry Humphries or Damian Hoyland on one wing, put Axel Muller on the other wing, and then Graydon Bowd in the back. And I think that's the sort of ideal lineup that we've got, because then you've got Grady is a potential another distributor and as a you know good kicking option in the backfield, and you've got Damian Hoyland somewhere where he's going to touch the ball a bit more often on the wing and where he can potentially you know break around people and gain a bunch of territory. I think that would be really that personally would be how I would line the team up.
Well, so let's dig into that a little bit more. Let's forecast this matchup against Utah. Just Match day 23. Big changes? Do you anticipate big changes? Should there be big changes? Do we need some type of, like, spark here to really, you know, maybe the addition of Stephen Longwell is enough, but it feels like there needs to be something else, something, I don't know what that is, needs to happen to get this team, like, rolling again. I don't know what that is, and I think we keep talking about it, but at a certain point, it's going to come down to the play on the field, and I know those guys care. I mean, real quickly, during the game, since we were behind, we were on the hill there, and Eau Claire was getting scored on there a little bit, I mean, the players were not happy. They were getting mad at each other, and I think rightfully so. I think they hold themselves to a high standard. But it wasn't like, oh, the game's getting away from us, let's just eat out these next few minutes. Like, they were upset with the way that they were playing. And in my mind, I like that, because I don't want a team to just lay down. And I don't think this team would lay down, but they were not happy with their performance. So what's it going to take, AKP? Do we need to do some type of changes? Like, talk me through what you think that lineup may look like for Utah to spark us to a big road win.
Like I say, I don't think it's the line or the personnel that's the problem. I don't think the lineup's the problem. I think you can do some tweaks here and there. I think Willie T has really shown that he's probably the best option we have at 13. But, you know, why there just needs to be, I think it's a tactical problem. I think it's, maybe it's an attitude problem. Like, I don't know. I'm glad that you witnessed the players in that moment and having those strong feelings about their own performance on the field, because I think that is part of it. Like I say, I mean, the players need to take, at the end of the day, the players are the ones on the field. They're the ones who are going to win or lose that game. And I think, you know, there just needs to be, they just do need to find something. You know, we don't have any answers. We've been talking about this for weeks, and it's hard to know what the correct answer is, because I think it's one of those things that's specific to the team and to the players, and there's no one answer. There's no, you know, just add some baking soda and you're good to go. There's like, they've got to find what works for them. I do think, though, that part of it probably is playing with a bit more aggressiveness. I mean, you looked at that second half when they really started, they were like, we're just going to push this ball down the field and you're not going to be able to stop us. They made huge amounts of ground every time they had the ball. You combine that with some, you know, good kicking stuff and some, I think they need to get back to putting teams on the back foot on defense. You know, we talked about how they're a little predictable now, but it's also, you know, that's partly they let teams be on the front foot on defense. They let the teams come up quickly. You know, there's ways to punish a team that shoots up and has high line speed. You can get, you know, if their line shoots up, you can get past their line and, you know, potentially have a line break with tons of people. I think part of it is offloading. That's the offload game is how to part of how you punish fast line speed. And there just needs to be a willingness to make things happen and to put in the extra effort and energy, because it takes a lot of effort to play that way, to be constantly. And I think, you know, like, Colin Gross sort of spent some time lingering on the wing in that game, and it ended up working really well. That sort of thing where it's like these players should be wanting to, you know, break the game line every time and to be sort of trying to make things happen a little more. And that's what I would like to see. I don't know if that's the answer. At the end of the day, I don't actually have the answers, but.
Well, you know, it's so funny. There's, you know, the Green Bay Packers, to steal a line from Rugby's cousin, the Green Bay Packers, when Vince Lombardi was the head coach, they were infamous for this running play called the sweep. Basically, the guard pulls, the running back follows behind, right? Like, everyone knew it was coming, right? And Lombardi said something like, yeah, the defense knows it's coming, but we're going to out-execute them. And essentially, that's what Eau Claire needs to do here, right? Like, we've got good pieces on the field. We've got some playmakers that can make some plays here. now it just comes down to out executing them. Like, let's go out there and perform with the way the expectations that we set out at the beginning of the season. Because I do think this team is just misfiring a little bit, and we're not too far off here. So, AKP on that one, talk me through what you think the biggest what's the biggest thing that needs to happen here in this Utah match, the key to winning, to beating the Utah Warriors at their place for Old Glory. What's the key to winning this one?
I think on attack, it's just figuring out a formula, any formula, really. You know, if you're going to keep it in the forwards and just smash it up, then do that successfully. You know, if you're going to play it safe and hold on to the ball and, you know, hold possession and drive, you know, 97 meters down the field, then do that. Figure out the way to do that successfully, or, you know, find a way to get your playmakers on the edge into space. You know, find a way to make line breaks and get people, you know, down the field and give them that opportunity to make a difference. I think defensively, it comes from, you know, I think our defense has been good this year. And even, you know, 38 points to Houston, I still think this is a good defense. It just has moments where it just breaks. And I think trying to limit those moments where it breaks, you know, eliminating those moments where they let a guy through, or there's a kick. And, you know, some of those tries for Houston, they were just, you know, what can you do, eh? Like, the ball bounces in the exact right way. The, you know, someone gets the intercept, and there's only so much you can do to limit that. But, you know, we let almost every team that comes up against us get that try bonus point. I would love to see us hold a team down, you know, to maybe two, three tries at most again. And I think it comes from those, you know, not just winning the battles, but winning the war, because, you know, we seem to lose those key battles that lead to the other team scoring. And I think those are the things that Old Glory needs to do.
Well, if you look at this Utah Warriors offense real quickly, we know about Joe Hodgson at 10. He's a good distributor. On the wings, it starts to get scarier again, right? You have Joe Manu, right? Manu, who I think led the league in tries last year. Slower start this season, but he's a scary, you know, scary player, capped Eagle. With Caleb Mockney coming back, you know, he's slotted into fullback. Michael Manson has moved out to a wing. He is a speedster. He's dynamic with ball in hand. And then in the centers, you've got Paul Lasique and Mika Kruse. I mean, this ever is a test for Old Glory's cover defense and scramble and be able to contain, this is going to be it right here. This could potentially be a high-scoring game here. I think Old Glory needs to be their kicking strategy, they need to be very selective on how we're kicking this ball down the field, because you've got playmakers like Mockney and Manson and Mono, where if they get the ball in hand with some space, we're going to be scrambling a little bit here. So I think we've got to be very careful and strategic with how we are kicking this ball down the
field. How we're chasing, because that's the thing, is like when you kick and kick to you know, if you kick it to these guys and give them space, then they can do something. If you kick it to them, but you give them no space, then you have the opportunity to make something happen there, and they're less of a threat. So we've got to be chasing our kicks. That's another thing that we got away from, that was we were good at the beginning of the year, and somehow we've forgotten how to do it in the last few weeks.
I imagine our pack is going to be pretty strong. I almost anticipate Jack Martin, Stephen Longwell. I think we're going to have Rob Harley, I think Nangali, and then I think we'll have Colin Gross, Bavaro, and
Corey Daniel.
Corey Daniel. Sorry, Corey Daniel at the flank and Bavaro at 8. That's almost what I think the pack is going to be. And look, if we can control it, the pack, if our scrum can be dominant, we can get them on their back heel, I think that's going to set up our attack really well and open things up for us. That kind of excited about what that pack is going to do in this Utah game. But so that's my key there. Strong in the pack. let's be very careful about how we're kicking to Utah's backs. And I think Old Glory has a shot of winning this. So I'm just going to go out here. This is score prediction time. I do think this is, I always say it, I do think this could potentially be a high scoring game, given all of the factors and things that we've seen, that this could be somewhere in the mid to low 30s type of range here. Now that does, that means that Old Glory is going to start needing to score some tries, something they maybe haven't shown in the last couple of weeks, but I think they've got a shot here if our pack can really control this. I think Old Glory has a shot at winning this on the road. I think it's probably going to be a close one. I think it might be a Jason Robertson, you know, penalty at the end or something to get us over the hump. I am going to go out here and say Old Glory 34, Utah 31. Old Glory wins by 3. Bonus point win.
I'm hoping that we can hold them under 20 or under 30 points, but also get over 30 ourselves. I think that's the ideal. If we can hold them to three tries, maybe a penalty, so say 24 to 32 for us would be, I think that's what I want. I don't know if that's what's going to happen, but it's what I want.
I will say the last 3 weeks, my MLR picks have not been very good. I've started off pretty strong. I missed like one or two here and there, but in the last 3 weeks, man, I've been 3-2, I think 3-2, 3-2, then last week, 2-3, no good, can't have that. So AKP, as we move into the rest of week 9 and we talk about picks, of course, we're picking Old Glory to beat Utah on the road. Maybe it's high scoring, maybe it's not, we'll find out. It should be a fun one, Friday night FS1, 9 p.m. kickoff time, so not too late for those here on the East Coast. Moving into the rest of that week, Saturday, so funky. There's three matches Saturday evening. The first one kicks off at 7:30. The second one kicks off at 7, and then the third one kicks off at 8 p.m. So it's definitely going to be a multi-screen day if you're watching it at home Saturday night. But Anthem is going to be hosting NOLA Gold, AKP. I mean, NOLA Gold's going to be trying to get a bonus point win out of this, right? Like, that's the expectation for every team that's playing Anthem.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, when has Anthem shown that anything else is really going to happen? Like, we know what this Anthem team is, and it doesn't matter who they play in MLR. It's going to be at least a, you know, 14-point win for the non-Anthem team. And, yeah, 6 tries, 8 tries, somewhere in that range.
Could Anthem squeak one here on NOLA?
I mean, it's always possible. It's not. No one should bet on that.
Yeah.
Anyone picking that is.
Yeah.
Taking a risk.
Yeah. That's a good way to put it. All right. Second game, Saturday night, 7:30. Miami hosting Dallas. This one is. This is a fun one. Miami getting a little bit of momentum, big win over NOLA. Dallas coming off their bye. Both teams fighting for playoff, you know, seeding, positioning in their respective conferences. Dallas is on the road. I still think you got to give a slight net edge to the Dallas Jackals on this one. I think this could be another high-scoring game. Both teams seem to give up some points here. AKP, what are your thoughts on this one?
Yeah, I think you definitely need to go with Dallas here. I mean, Miami looked good, but one game is one game. So I'd want to, before I'm going to be picking them to beat a team like Dallas, I'd want to see more from them. But yeah, I think this could be. I won't necessarily predict the score. I think Dallas wins, but I think the combined score is over 70. I think the total for the match, over 70 points scored.
Yeah. So if you're playing fantasy, circle that one as players to potentially get on your roster for that in the weekly challenge too. So, all right, moving on. Saturday night, this will be a ladoozy. You've got number 2 in the West hosting number 3 in the West. The Houston Sabercats hosting the San Diego Legion. You go first.
I think I mean, I think both teams are actually pretty close. I'm going to give the edge to Houston, though, just because they're at home. And I think Houston overall has seemed more consistent. Neither team has seemed super consistent. They've both had their moments of sort of surprisingly not quite as good as you expect them to be. But I think I have to give it Houston at home.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think the edge goes to Houston. I think I'm just more, I trust more of Houston's fly half play, whether it's AJ or Davey Coitser. And if you have them both on, Davey slots out to fullback. That guy just makes plays all over the field. He was running all over DC. He's one of my favorite players. I think he is or soon to be domestic eligible. So that'll be interesting to see, for the number 10 jersey. Yeah, me and Bill Baker talked with him a couple weeks ago about that. It sounds like, if USA Rugby reached out, Scott Lawrence, and said, "Hey, Davey, you interested?" I'm sure he would say yes. So something to see there. Yeah, I'm give the edge to Houston. It could be a really fun game. I think it will be a fun game, but I'm going to give the edge to Houston. And then AKP final game of week 9, RFC LA hosting the New England Free Jacks. It's actually going to be a fun day of rugby, a double header there at Dignity Sports Health Park, because the USA Women's Eagles will be hosting Canada. First home match for the USA Women's Eagles since 2021. So if you're out in the LA area, you got to get to both games. That'll be a fun Sunday afternoon, evening of rugby. It's going to be a big, big test for the USA Women's Eagles, Canada's top three in the world. I think USA is ranked 9th right now. So I'll hold my score prediction for another podcast. But AKP, let's talk about RFC LA New England. Again, we're hearing rumors New England may be out with one of their star players. RFC LA, I mean, they've got moments there where they can, they hung around in that Chicago game for a little bit, but they did give up 50 some points. I mean, this is New England, like, even though they're traveling across the country, this is a game that I think New England should probably win comfortably.
Yeah, I think you'd have to favor New England just because of how they've done all season. But I think RFC LA is not a bad team. They haven't won very many games, but they've, especially if they can keep the discipline under control, I think they do have a real shot in this game. So I wouldn't expect it to be a blowout necessarily.
Interesting. Interesting. Okay. Well, folks, that is week 9 of a major league rugby. I think it's a must-win game for Old Glory DC because I think they need some momentum going into week 10 when they're going to be welcoming back JAMA. It's also a home match in week 10 for Old Glory. They're hosting the Miami Sharks. Just feel like we need a little of that proverbial momentum, that word that everyone likes to throw around there. I'm going to use it. But I think a win here in Utah would give a big boost to confidence for the squad, for the fan base, as we click over the calendar into May. And I mean, AKP, after this, we've got 8 weeks left of the regular season. I mean, the season is going by way too quickly.
It always does.
You'll be at that May 4th home match, right, against Miami?
Oh, for sure, yeah.
Okay. All right, I'm gonna have to try and get out there again as well. AKP, closing segment here. I always spring a question on you. Worst case scenario, say Old Glory DC loses this match to Utah and say it gets away from them. They get no table points. What happens next?
I think that's the point where, I mean, it depends how they lose. I'll put it out there. If they lose, but there were some bizarre referee decisions, and there was, you saw a difference in the team, but somehow they managed to have several scores foiled by drop balls and that sort of things where you're like, okay, this was just bad luck. Then I think you just move on and you say, okay, we'll just not let that happen again. That was a fluke. But if it's more of the same of what we've seen, you know, a struggle to score, a lack of real game plan on attack, you know, just breaking down at some points in defense, I think there needs to be some dramatic changes. There needs to be I don't know what that looks like. Mm-hmm. But there needs to be something to sort of shock the team into better performance.
I'll stop you there because mentally I don't want to go there yet, because I don't think that's going to happen. I think Old Glory understands what's in front of him, how important this week 9 matchup is against Utah, that that's not something I want to talk about next week. So we're just going to gloss over that. But we'll, I have to throw it out there. Cross that
bridge if we come to it.
Yeah, exactly. It's always good to have, you know, plan, think ahead, you know, alternate scenarios and all that stuff. But right now we're focused on week 9, getting a road win against the Utah Warriors. For my co-host, Alistair Kirschpool, I am John Fitzpatrick. You've been listening to the Glorious Rugby Podcast. Catch us next week when we break down Utah match and prepare for week 10 and the return of Jameson Fa'anana Schultz. Until then.